Hey, welcome to the Growth.me summary of the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. This is the life story of one of the founding fathers of America. Benjamin Franklin is often described as a self-made man and the first American because of his lifelong dedication to values like enthusiastic work, self-education, and personal improvement. Now, this book was published way back in 1791, and today on Amazon it has 4.4 stars, and on Goodreads it has 3.8 stars. Online reviewers, the positive ones, loved Franklin's practical wisdom and see this book as a window into an important historical time. But there were also some critical reviewers, sort of critical, who said the book can be slow to read, because it's written in an older style of English language. Our top quote from this book is, "Human happiness is produced not so much by great pieces of good fortune that seldom happen, as by little advantages that occur every day." End quote. If Benjamin Franklin was alive today, then I bet his Twitter account would be fantastic. I mean, this is the guy who helped shape the values of newborn America by popularizing quotes like, "Early to bed and early to rise make a man healthy, wealthy, and wise." He also said, "A penny saved is a penny earned," but he wrote it a bit differently. And he also said, "Three may keep a secret if two of them are dead." And there are tons of other great quotes like that. So he lived about 250 years ago, but even today, many people continue to look up to Benjamin Franklin as a role model. In fact, the billionaire investor Charlie Munger, aka Warren Buffett's business partner, said that Benjamin Franklin is one of his all-time heroes. And I've read so many modern self-help books that continue to share a story or a tip from Franklin's life. So who exactly was he? Well, if you look on Wikipedia, Benjamin Franklin's page stretches on and on and on, because he made so many important contributions to science and engineering and history. For example, he proved that lightning is electricity with a famous kite experiment. He also invented bifocal glasses that people still rely on today. And of course, he did all of that in his spare time, when he wasn't busy with founding America and signing papers like the Declaration of Independence. So Benjamin Franklin wrote this autobiography in four parts throughout his life. Unfortunately, he never fully finished writing it, so it only covers the first parts of his life. On the other hand, those early parts of his life are especially interesting because they made him who he was. And I also like that he shares not just his successes in this book, but also his flaws and mistakes too, like his struggle to keep an organized schedule and his regrets of not inoculating his son against smallpox, and his son later died from it. So let's begin with lesson number one, decide to improve. Young Franklin made himself better through reading and self-reflection. The United States of America did not exist when Benjamin Franklin was born in Boston in 1706, but he would eventually play a big role in creating it. At the time, the area was known as New England, and it was under the control of the King of England. Like many people in the colonies, Franklin's father had arrived from England to escape religious persecution because he was a nonconformist, which means he had slightly different beliefs from the official Church of England. Benjamin was actually his father's 15th child out of a total of 17 kids between two wives. And today that sounds crazy. But in those days, children died a lot more often, so people had more of them. His father worked as a tallow chandler, which is related to making candles and soap. Now, in those days, kids were basically bred or trained into their careers by their parents from a younger age. And so at first, Benjamin was working under his father, but he really hated that kind of work, like making candles and soaps. Instead, he wanted to go to sea, but his father wouldn't let him. But the young Benjamin also loved books, so at 12 years old he was sent by his father to become a printer, and he began learning as an apprentice under his older brother James, who had just opened a printing house. From the ages of 12 to 17, Benjamin Franklin formed his future character by doing a lot of things. First, reading lots. From a very young age, he bought books with all the little money he had. He did go to grammar school from the ages of about 8 to 10, but most of his lifelong education came from self-studying books. Two that made a big impression on him included The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan, which was a famous Christian story, and also Parallel Lives by Plutarch, which was an ancient collection of biographies of Roman emperors. Another change was eating lightly. At 16 years old, Benjamin Franklin was converted to vegetarianism after reading a book by Thomas Tryon, an early believer in animal rights. As a large side benefit, Franklin discovered that eating lighter meals helped him think a lot more clearly and learn more easily. And then he also tried writing better. Franklin became a very good writer at a young age by following this method. First, he would pick an article that he liked that was very well written, usually from the Spectator magazine, and he would read the article a few times, and then he would wait a few days, and then try to rewrite the article himself from memory. Finally, he would carefully compare his own writing to the original article, looking for where his version of the article fell short. And in that way, he greatly improved his writing, and that skill would continue to serve him for a lifetime. Another improvement he made was arguing less. Early in his life, Franklin would often disagree with people, and he would aggressively debate and confront them. But over time, he matured and realized that was not effective. And he was inspired to change his whole approach after reading about how the philosopher Socrates changed people's minds with simple questions. And so Franklin began speaking with much less certainty, instead asking more questions as a humble inquirer and doubter. And he says this indirect approach caused a lot of his later success in politics and public influence. And here I have a great quote from this book. "I wish well-meaning, sensible men would not lessen their power of doing good by a positive, assuming manner. That seldom fails to disgust, tends to create opposition, and to defeat every one of those purposes for which speech was given to us, to wit, giving or receiving information or pleasure." So basically he's saying that he wishes smart people would not lessen their power of influence by being positive and assuming, like confrontational, which often only disgusts other people, creates oppositions, and defeats our purposes. And he says speech was created or given to us for receiving information or pleasure. Now, the classic self-help author Dale Carnegie was deeply influenced by Benjamin Franklin. In his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, which is all about getting along with others, the first rule in that book is to never criticize, condemn, or complain. And that rule is not about being nice, it's about doing what works. You see, Dale Carnegie found that when we directly confront others, we mostly provoke resistance and resentment instead of changing people's minds. And Carnegie later explained this more with this quote, "When dealing with people, let us remember that we are not dealing with creatures of logic. We are dealing with creatures of emotion, creatures bristling with prejudices and motivated by pride and vanity." End quote. As we can see, both Carnegie and Franklin decided to work with human nature rather than against it, and it's a kind of wisdom to do that. And you can learn more tips like that in our summary of How to Win Friends and Influence People on Growth.me. But to summarize this lesson, from a very young age, Franklin pursued personal development by spending most of his money on books. From reading, he learned to avoid direct arguments, like Socrates. He learned to eat more healthy vegetarian meals, like Tryon. And he learned to become a better writer by copying the best writing and articles that he could find. Next, we have Lesson 2, Risk Adventure. Teenage Franklin grew in maturity by leaving his hometown. At 17 years old, Benjamin Franklin was still an apprentice at his older brother's printing house, but they began having larger disagreements between each other. And so Franklin decided to find work somewhere else, which meant moving away from Boston. So he went to Philadelphia, where he would eventually spend most of his life. Now, Franklin had a long and miserable journey to Philadelphia. On the first boat that he took, the rotting sails fell apart, so they were stuck in the ocean for over 30 hours without food or much water. And Franklin then walked most of a day in the pouring rain. He slept outside in the cold night, and he got sick with a fever. And then he found a second boat where he needed to row the boat for many hours until they finally reached Philadelphia. In this book, he spends quite a few pages telling this story, and that's because it shows that his beginnings were very different from his later success and fame. And so that was Franklin's situation at 17 years old. He was a very young man, almost a boy, really, with very little money in a new city where he knew nobody. In Philadelphia, Franklin asked around and soon he found work at one of the only printing houses, which was owned by a man named Kamer. They did not get along too well, and Franklin wanted to go into business for himself. Now, he happened to meet the governor of the province, who was named William Keith, and this governor saw Franklin as a promising young man and offered to fund him in business. Franklin happily accepted the offer, and he traveled to buy printing equipment to London, England. Unfortunately, that governor turned out to be a very unreliable man, and he never actually sent the money overseas. But Franklin would eventually stay in London for a year and a half, and he worked at two famous printing houses where he improved his work skills. Eventually, Franklin would return to Philadelphia, and then he worked again at Kamer's printing house until he was about 22 years old. And during those years of early adulthood, Franklin's character continued to grow and develop. Here are some changes. First, he became a religious free thinker. Franklin writes that he always believed in basic religious principles like the existence of God, an eternal soul, justice, etc. But he grew to doubt a lot of religious doctrine, and he would always spend his Sundays studying books rather than going to service at the Presbyterian Church. Now, on the other hand, he would later grow to also appreciate the value of religious practice more after he witnessed himself and other free thinkers he knew behaving immorally or without consideration. So he kind of became a free thinker, but then he grew to doubt the value of free thinking also. Another change was he gave up strict vegetarianism. On one of those long, difficult boat journeys that he took, a hungry Franklin saw some fish being grilled over a campfire, and he was strongly tempted to eat it. And what pushed him over the edge was seeing that the fish themselves were eating other fishes, like in their stomachs. And so how could that be wrong if the fish themselves were eating other fish, right? And in one of the most psychologically insightful quotes in this book, Franklin muses that, quote, "it's so convenient to be a reasonable creature," end quote, because a clever person can always invent reasons to do whatever they want. So I think that was really a funny quote. Another change was that he organized a club of mutual improvement called the Junto. This was a group of several friends that met every Friday evening in Philadelphia. They all seemed to love reading, and they discussed morals, politics, and science. And so this allowed them to really grow their understanding and their minds. To keep these discussions respectful and constructive, they had careful rules about disagreements in this Junto. Now, the classic author Napoleon Hill wrote some of the first books on personal development based on studying hundreds of successful people like millionaires. And one thing he noticed was that wealthy people don't just rely on their own minds, but they relied on the minds of many other people too, because they got advice from trusted inner circles of smart friends and colleagues. And so Napoleon Hill concluded that we should all try to organize our own group of advisors, which he called a mastermind group. You can learn more tips like that in our summary of the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. But to summarize this lesson, at 17 years old, Franklin left to Philadelphia. The boat journey was very miserable. He had a little money and knew nobody in the beginning. Yet he soon found work and built up a circle of friends and influence using a club of mutual improvement called the Junto. Lesson 3 is work industriously. Franklin labored long hours at his new printing house. At work, Franklin met Hugh Meredith, whose father offered to finance the two men in business. So they became business partners and set up their own printing house in Philadelphia. But after some time, the father could not pay half the money he had promised. And Franklin almost went out of business very quickly, but he was thankfully saved by two of his close friends who offered him loans. So that's where Franklin was in 1728, a young 22-year-old man now running his own printing house, but with some big loans to pay off. In those early days, Franklin worked incredibly hard and spent little money. Neighbors would often see him working from early morning until maybe 11 p.m. at night. He also avoided public leisure activities like fishing and hunting, but he did continue to read in private for 1 or 2 hours each day. Well, Benjamin Franklin's printing business eventually took off, and it even formed a foundation for public influence for him. So he began publishing the Pennsylvania Gazette. Because of his excellent writing ability, Franklin soon won many subscribers to his newspaper, including many members of the government assembly. And then he also began winning profitable government contracts to print money. In fact, to get the law passed for printing more money, Franklin published a pamphlet praising the benefits of more paper currency, and then he was rewarded with the contract. And he also began writing a famous yearly booklet called Poor Richard's Almanac. This was a collection of interesting information and wisdom, where many of Franklin's most well-known quotes come from. It was very profitable, selling up to 10,000 copies per year, and he continued updating it for 26 years. So if we fast forward several years in the future, Franklin would begin setting up partnerships with some of his employees. He would send someone to another city and give them some money to start up a new printing house, and then Franklin would get 1/3 of those profits for 6 years. After 6 years, the former employee could buy out Franklin's share of the business. And he wrote that these partnerships all ended on very friendly terms, unlike many partnerships, because the terms were written down very clearly from the beginning. Well, I think that's a good lesson even for business people today. Make your terms very clear at the beginning. But Franklin's most important business partnership would end up being with a man named David Hull, who he put in charge of his own printing house. It was like having a business manager who took care of everything. That partnership would last for 18 years, and it would give Franklin the free time to pursue his other interests, like studying, experimentation, and politics. I think it really shows that passive income is not a new idea at all. People who are smart and ambitious have always tried to find ways to make money in a way that was disconnected from their own time and labor. So to me, it looks like Benjamin Franklin figured out how to live a 4-hour workweek lifestyle 200 years ahead of his time. But even outside of business, he continued to work hard, and his work ethic made him very successful. Franklin became a famous scientist and inventor. He advanced the science of electricity. He also invented a more efficient stove and gave away the design for free, refusing to patent it. So how did Benjamin Franklin get involved in electricity? Well, in 1746, he learned how to do some party tricks using glass tubes that stored electricity from a man named Dr. Spencer. Franklin was so excited that he began creating his own experiments, and the most famous one involved flying a kite into storm clouds, demonstrating for the first time that lightning was the same thing as electricity. And he didn't stop there. Wikipedia writes, Franklin was a prodigious inventor. Among his many creations were the lightning rod, the Franklin stove, bifocal glasses, and the flexible urinary catheter. End quote. And over his lifetime, Franklin would receive many honorary degrees from universities like Harvard, Yale, and Oxford, even though he had left school at the age of 12. To summarize this lesson, at 22 years old, Franklin launched his own printing house. He began publishing a newspaper, pamphlets, and books, which began giving him public influence. He often worked from early morning until almost midnight. He also avoided leisure except for reading books 1 or 2 hours daily. Later on, his business would allow him the freedom to greatly impact the politics of America and the science of electricity and create many good inventions. Lesson 4 is strive for perfection. Franklin created a self-help method to build virtue into his character. Young people today seem to live in a culture that promotes self-love and self-affirmation no matter what. Well, Benjamin Franklin had the exact opposite attitude. I mean, sure, he had confidence and self-esteem, but he was also always thinking of how he was not yet good enough. And he set a goal for himself of achieving moral perfection. At first, he tried to achieve that goal through sheer willpower alone. But he found that he always failed when his attention slipped for a moment. So he decided to try something different, and Franklin created a unique method that would build habits of moral virtue right into his character. And here's what his method was. First, Franklin wrote down 13 moral virtues that he wanted to have, including temperance, silence, order, resolution, frugality, industry, sincerity, justice, moderation, cleanliness, tranquility, chastity, and humility. For that last virtue, he wrote down humility, imitate Jesus and Socrates. And then in his journal, he created a table with those 13 virtues being going down vertically on the table, and then the 7 days of the week going across the table horizontally. And so his idea was to focus on only one virtue per week, and then he would fill out the chart day by day. So every day, focusing on only one virtue of the week, he would write down a mark in that day's box every time he failed to live up to the virtue. And so Franklin could complete this entire chart of 13 virtues in 13 weeks. Remember, one virtue per week. And after he completed it, he would erase the marks and start again. And he could complete 4 courses of this chart per year. Over time, he was glad to see the number of marks that he was writing down in the boxes was decreasing, which meant that he was getting better at living the virtues. In his autobiography, Benjamin Franklin speaks very highly of this method, saying that it helped him to live a significantly more happy and useful life over his lifetime. However, he eventually completed this chart less and less often, because he concluded that his initial goal of moral perfection was simply not realistic. But I think it shows Franklin clearly understood the power of building habits gradually over time. For him, self-improvement was not about doing something big for one day, but about getting a little better each and every day. For example, writing a book is not about writing 50 pages in one day, but maybe making ourselves write 2 pages every day and continuing that habit for several months. This kind of approach may feel slower in the beginning, but it's how most effective people achieve huge goals. The modern productivity expert James Clear recently wrote, quote, "Habits are the compound interest of self-improvement. The same way that money multiplies through compound interest, the effects of your habits multiply as you repeat them. They seem to make little difference on any given day, and yet the impact they deliver over the months and years can be enormous. It is only when looking back 2, 5, or perhaps 10 years later that the value of good habits and the cost of bad ones becomes strikingly apparent." End quote. You can read more about the science of habits in our summary of his book, Atomic Habits, by James Clear. To summarize this lesson, Franklin pursued moral perfection with a particular method. He wrote down a chart in his journal with 13 rows representing the 13 virtues he wanted to live, and 7 columns representing the days of the week. And so using this chart for daily accountability, over time he became better at embodying the virtues he wanted to have, like moderation, order, and frugality. Lesson 5 is make your world. Franklin shaped the city around him with public projects. Most people probably don't feel like they have the power to create meaningful change where they live, and that's understandable. I mean, most of us are busy with work, family, and social obligations. But let's remember that the number one reason why Benjamin Franklin continues to be remembered today is that he took action and changed the world around him over and over and over again. That's what made him special. For example, in 1757, Franklin was sick and tired of Philadelphia's dark, dirty streets, so he wrote a bill in the government to pave the streets and set up street lamps. And then sometime later, he randomly paid a woman who needed money to sweep a street for him, and because in those days, the streets were covered in dust. Well, she did such a great job that Franklin realized the city could pay some employees to sweep the streets daily, and that would stop dust from getting into people's eyes, in their homes, and in their shops. And you see, Franklin deeply believed that improving people's quality of life was not always about making big, dramatic changes, but about removing those small daily annoyances that were small but infrequent, like getting dust in our eyes every day. Over his lifetime, Franklin organized many more public projects that were the first of their kind in Philadelphia, and sometimes even first in America or the world. He organized the first library in Philadelphia, which allowed people to access a large number of books for a yearly subscription fee, and they would have to order most of the books from England. There was also the first volunteer fire company in America. That was an organized group of homeowners meeting every month to discuss how to prevent fires and stop them quickly. There was also the first educational academy in Philadelphia, which later grew into the University of Pennsylvania, which continues to be one of the best universities in the world today. And there was also the first local public hospital, and probably the third hospital in all of America. Franklin helped to organize funding and public support for it. Now, to gather public support for all of these projects, Franklin would first present the benefits of them in a newspaper article or in a pamphlet, and only after that would he try to gather subscriptions or to propose it to the government assembly. And he also mentions that he found it much easier to gather support and funding when he took as little credit as possible for the projects, simply telling others that it was a group of friends that were setting up a library or whatever. So that, I thought that was very interesting too. And Franklin's whole approach to life reminds me of what another highly impactful man, Steve Jobs, once said, quote, "Everything around you that you call life was made up by people who are no smarter than you, and you can change it. You can influence it. You can build your own things that other people can use," end quote. And you can also check out our summary of Steve Jobs' biography by Walter Isaacson on growth.me. To summarize this lesson, over his lifetime, Franklin helped organize many projects in Philadelphia, including the first library, first academy, hospital, and fire company. He used writing to build public support, and then he proposed the projects in the assembly or gathered voluntary subscriptions. Okay, and finally we have lesson 6, Drive Political Change. The American Revolution, encouraged by Franklin, was a response to unfairness. Let's finish this up by talking about Benjamin Franklin's political rise. Now, let's not forget that this man started his career arranging letters in a local printing shop, and today he's on all the $100 bills in America. How could that happen? Well, let's find out. One of the keys was Franklin's printing business, especially his newspaper, because they gave him influence to shape public opinion by publishing his words, his arguments, far and wide. And that made politicians want to be friendly with him. So in 1736, at the age of 30, Franklin was chosen by the Pennsylvania government to be clerk of the General Assembly. He found this position very useful for winning public printing contracts that were very profitable. Franklin continued to be chosen for the position of clerk until 1751. He also later served important roles as Deputy Postmaster General and then full Postmaster General of America in 1753. Now, here's a great story from the autobiography that illustrates why Franklin was such a great diplomat. You see, one year, he faced resistance from a new politician who voted against him remaining clerk of the assembly. So to gain that new politician's approval, Franklin did not try to act nice towards him and servile. Instead, he asked to borrow a rare book that the other politician owned. And then 1 week later, Franklin returned the book, and soon the two men were on very friendly terms. Now, that was no accident. All along, Franklin had been following what he calls an old maxim that says, "He that has once done you a kindness will be more ready to do you another than he whom you yourself have obliged." Now, in the modern book Influence, the psychology professor Robert Cialdini explained 6 principles of human influence. One of these principles is called commitment and consistency, and it may explain why Franklin's little trick worked. You see, scientists have found that when people are asked to do a small favor, then they're much more likely to do a larger favor in the future. So it confirms that old saying. For example, researchers found that people were more than 4 times more likely to agree with putting a large sign on their front lawn that says, "Drive carefully," if they had first agreed to put a small sticker with a similar message in their window 2 weeks earlier. So in short, we have some kind of psychological drive to appear consistent with past actions that we've taken. And so if we let someone borrow a valuable book that we own, that must mean we like them, right? That they're our friends. You can learn more interesting psychology like that in our summary of the book Influence by Robert Cialdini. Of course, Benjamin Franklin is most famous for being one of the founding fathers of America. Back in his day, the colonies of America were officially ruled by the English king. But over the years, more and more disagreements and tensions came up between the people in America and their overseas rulers in England. For example, many wealthy English people who owned land in America used their political power to avoid paying taxes, which Benjamin Franklin really didn't like. And eventually, it seemed that the majority of people in America were in favor of becoming independent, but this change did not happen overnight. So in 1754, there was a possible war between England and France, so the American colonies wanted to prepare themselves for a possible attack from French troops. The leaders of all the colonies met for a big meeting called the Albany Congress, where they soon began talking about creating a union between all the colonies for the purpose of defense. Benjamin Franklin was at this Congress, and he wrote about it in this autobiography, and at that time he even wrote down a plan for a government to lead this proposed union, but in the end they dropped the idea at that time. Now, unfortunately, Franklin's autobiography ends before America's official independence in 1776, but Franklin would eventually play a big role in that, including helping to write the famous Declaration of Independence. In fact, he signed the 4 most important documents at the time to declare independence. And then later in his life, in 1779, Franklin went to France, where he served for 6 years as a diplomat, and where he wrote a lot of this autobiography, and he eventually died in 1790 after a very productive and influential life. To summarize this lesson, Franklin actively drove political change to make his society more good and fair. He served in the Pennsylvania government for decades, helping write many new laws. He also played a key role in America's independence, feeling strongly that being ruled from overseas by the English king was unfair. And the main point is that he played an active role in changing society around him rather than accepting it as it is. So let's talk about 3 practical action steps for how we could apply this book to our lives. First, we can use words that carry less certainty, like maybe, possibly, and I think, when we are trying to change someone else's mind. Remember that Benjamin Franklin's people skills dramatically improved when he stopped directly contradicting people he disagreed with. Instead, he tried to act as a humble questioner, like the ancient Socrates. A second tip is to organize a weekly mastermind group to discuss your ideas and goals. Remember that Benjamin Franklin created a club of mutual improvement called the Junto in his early 20s that was very helpful for his later success and influence. The members of that club worked in all kinds of professions, but they all seemed to love reading. A third tip is that we can create a daily chart to keep track of one of our goals. Remember Franklin's 13-week chart of moral virtues? Well, I think we can all be a lot more successful in reaching our goals with that kind of longer-term vision and daily accountability. For example, instead of just picking up weights at the gym whenever we feel motivated, what if we created a specific plan over a few months and then we carefully follow that plan? Wouldn't that make us far more effective? Okay, and I'll see you in the next one.